Welcome to Experience Matters, the podcast where we get under the skin of what really makes an effective brand experience. I'm your host, Mark Bell, and in this episode, we're going to be looking at something quite unique and quite interesting in the world of brand experience, and that is sound. Today, I'm joined by Luke and George from Hear Me Out, and we're going to dig really deep into the world of sonic branding. Good morning, chaps.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Firstly, let's get straight into it. What is sonic branding?
Sonic branding, and how we talk about it, is a sonic strategy. So, same as a marketing strategy. Anytime you use sound, you should have some considered purpose and intention for it. If you're not, then you're just kind of making it up as you go along.
Great. And then, so how does the sonic sound then actually tie back to the brand and what the brand means?
I think when you're thinking about the whole experience, you're speaking to a certain audience, and the music can do that just as much as the visuals can. People spend so much money and time figuring out the visuals, the color schemes, the fonts, how you're going to speak to a specific audience, but never do that with music. So you can write off a whole audience just by using the wrong kind of music. It turns people off quite quickly.
So I'm guessing, depending on, say, your different age, your different demographic, yeah, you're going to be appealing. So how do you know where to start? How do you know which sound is going to be right for which audience?
Yeah, I guess it's your target market, target demographic, and then also where you use sound as well is such a huge part of it. You know, you can't say one size fits all for sound because not everyone has the same mediums and channels of using sound. And then it's figuring out what's going to connect. And again, it all comes back to the marketing. So it's enhancing your marketing intention and how you're trying to make people feel. You know, like if you are a brand that's uplifting, positive, et cetera, you're going to have maybe higher tempo, lighter tonal ideas in terms of instrumentation, as opposed to if you are more, let's say, an underground menswear brand that is a bit more mysterious and dark, you're going to then have maybe lower frequencies, faster pace, that kind of thing.
That's hilarious. Just thinking about the sound associated with men's underwear is...
That's all we think about.
Great stuff. And then, you know, here at iCrossing, you know, when we connect with our audiences, we're often thinking about how we can develop that with them directly and kind of do, to some extent, audience testing. Mm. Do you do the same with sonic branding? Do you test and develop stuff with actual audiences?
Yeah, you can do. It depends, again, what the intention is behind it all. If you're doing sonic branding across the whole brand, the obvious answer is to do testing against a certain demographic. Mm. But it's almost treat it the same way as you would do with the visual. So if you're creating new logos, new color schemes, and then you're going to launch that out, it's much more of a long-term plan. So there's a lot more elements that affect the data that you're getting. If you think about a TV campaign, for example, it's hard for us to test the impact of the sound, because you've also got visual, maybe got celebrities in there, that it becomes quite complicated. But if you were testing a podcast, for example, conveniently, or music-based platforms, sound is much easier to test. But across a whole brand, it's so wide, you have to treat it as if you're doing a whole rebrand.
But with the podcast thing as well, they have done sort of testing, you know, across the whole of the industry, and, you know, radio sections with sonic branding elements have like a 17% increase in product recall.
Wow.
6% increase, I think it was, in purchase intention.
Wow.
So there is testing that's done on a wider base of people in terms of the impact of the sonic branding. For us, it always comes down to budgets as well. You can do specific testing with companies around sounds. And then I guess for us, we always like to, a lot of the brands and people we work for are, you know, they live the brand, they are the brand. And you kind of get that interplay between them just knowing it and staying true to what feels right to them, and then being not misled, but too overly led by data. That yes, it can be a large pool if you have the budget for it, but let's be honest, like there's still, it's always going to be slightly subjective.
Mm, I think it can limit a lot of the creativity in that side as well when you're looking at just the numbers. These people know the brand so well. When you start putting people in the seat of listening to the music that we would create for them, they get the moment that their audience gets just in that first moment as well. So you kind of know straight away whether it feels right for what they've been working on. And music's emotional. It's like the biggest thing for emotion.
It's so interesting, isn't it? And that's so important for a brand to have that emotion connection. So when a brand does relaunch itself and, you know, change its colour or even change its logo, is it important to change the sounds associated with that brand, or is it a need to connect to the memory of what went before?
I'd say it's probably more an evolution.
Question. Yeah.
So I was, I know Nationwide have just rebranded, but they've still got similar colours. It's still on a similar, it doesn't feel like a whole new brand. So if they had sound already there in their plans, it would probably be a more an evolution, updating the sounds and tones.
Yeah, and I think it's like a variation, something we offer in terms of businesses that work in different markets, et cetera. If you have a main motif for your sonic branding, is variations to hit the right notes, pardon the terrible pun, within different audiences while still staying true to the, like, the core of it. I guess McDonald's did it quite interesting. I haven't thought about this since you brought it up, but, you know, the I'm loving it.
Yeah.
They changed that to the whistle, which is an obviously an evolution of their mnemonic without it being a clear move away from it and a rebrand.
Well, they got the whistle and then they've got the ba-da-da-da-da. And it was Justin Timberlake, I think, that did that initially.
Oh, interesting.
20 years ago, whenever it was. And that, so that has evolved with the brand at the same time. So.
Yeah, and arguably, you'd want to be really heavily considering maintaining your sonic branding to have a common thread whilst you are challenging your customers with a new visual appearance. And I suppose then if you are aligned with your marketing strategy and your sonic strategy, then it can kind of do a little bit of the heavy lifting during that transition potentially, which I think could give you some comfort and might even make you braver in your visual rebranding as well.
Yeah, it's super interesting. And kind of talking then about the history and Justin Timberlake doing that one, you know, 20 years ago, the one that really sticks to my mind, don't have quite the same singing voices as you do, so I can't do it, but Intel Inside, I think that was one that I really remember, and that's going back years and years. Great stuff. Okay, so here at iCrossing, we're often helping kind of develop new brands into this world. So where do we start with sonic branding? We've got Company X, it's just about to launch. We want to put a sound next to it. How do we even start?
Soundboard.
Yeah, so we created a soundboard process. Starts with a brand questionnaire. And it puts the team through their paces, really, on how well they know the brand. And we try and dig that little bit deeper.
So, sorry, who that questionnaire is going to? Is that going to employees or to?
It would go to the
creative
team. The creative
team.
The brand.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
Yeah.
And so we start there, really get to know the audience that they're trying to speak to. Sometimes we get deeper than they've already got previously, and then we'll lay that out, but then it's really about getting references that kind of fit. It might be stuff that we've done before, we might use tracks that already exist. Feel it out with the team. Does it feel right to them? Does it hit all the marks for the audience? But also, which elements do we want to pull together? Like a mood board that you would do visually.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. So we'd come away just as you'd have your fonts, your logos, your colors. We put together the soundboard, which has how we imagine the brand to sound, audio examples, and then also specific elements within those that would constitute like your brand colors. So like you're gonna be heavily drum led, okay? You're actually gonna be maybe female vocal textures because of who you're, like with Sky Bingo, it was very much like the predominant market was females. Mm-hmm. So it was, okay, let's keep that tone and texture in there. So that then, even if they decide to use, you know, some brands then decide that they want to use library music if they can't invest fully in it yet, even after leaving that first stage, they at least know how to stay within their boundaries so that they have a consistent sonic identity.
Wow. And then, so when you then go beyond the soundboard. I see what you did there.
Mood board was that.
I see what you did there. Great stuff. When do you get into the actual composing stage, or do you not? Do you just use music that's already gone before?
Yeah, we'll always compose it. That once we've got that board there, that's when we'll go away and we'll start building ideas. And
are you composers yourselves, or do you work with composers?
So we both started producing music for ourselves. We're both artists before, still are. Spent a lot of years producing artists, like on major labels, indie labels, and then doing a lot more ad stuff. So the production is how it all started for us.
Yeah, and it was big time. The biggest thing for us was we're always a few degrees removed from the client, or we were when we were working as just composers and producers. But now we're like speaking directly to the client. So when we're hearing their ideas, we can put it straight to music. We can be bouncing ideas straight away.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And then when you're kind of sharing your first ideas with clients, I do remember going way back to art school and that kind of quite nervous kind of creative review. Is it a bit like that? Do you kind of give them different sounds and it, you know?
Yeah, it's. I get that because I think it's a sign that you still care about what you do.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're nervous about it. Yeah. If not, then, you know, why are you doing it? The soundboard process goes so deep that we generally just give one main theme, brand track as we would call it, that has different contours of light and shade, because the questionnaire, we've really understood what they want, and that's why that's such an important stage of it in terms of the references, etc. So definitely get nervous still
presenting it. Yeah,
but it's also great because you're nervous, and then like when we did the Sky Bingo or the Lish one, sorry, we did a spirits brand in Sweden called Lish Spirits, and they just loved it. Like one of them started crying on the call.
We had three lots of tears on that call.
Yeah, yeah.
We should have filmed that.
It gets back to your point, isn't it? How emotional music is.
Yes, totally. Yeah. Totally. Well, they've worked so hard on the brand for so long, and this was such a big missing piece for them. They do a lot of events. They're in a lot of like nightclubs. They're sponsoring racing teams and all sorts. So they're out there so much, but they had no sound. And they're the brand of the bars for all these people. So sound for that, it was just such a big missing piece of the puzzle, and they're just so proud of it. So it kind of connected so many dots they've been working towards. I think that's where the emotions came from.
And it ties back as well in terms of how a brand uses sound. You know, like for Lish to not have sound is crazy because they have so much visual content, so much video stuff, so many events, like you were just saying, compared to other spirit manufacturers that maybe just put some nice photos up on their Instagram. Mm.
Yeah, definitely.
You're like, for them, unless you're investing in it, you probably don't need a massive sonic strategy at all. But for someone like Lish to not, was like mind-blowing.
Yeah,
and then when you explain it to them, like, oh, yeah, that makes so much sense. Why have I never thought of that? Like,
yeah, well, they won't mind me saying this, but their playlist, when they were out there in the world and they were running the bars, had Bee Gees on it, it had old school music that they obviously loved themselves, but their whole target demographic was much younger. So instead, we were trying to find remixes of those songs, and straight away then that connected those two dots together. And then the track that we built, you know, took those influences from older tracks, but made them
so it all comes together.
It does, yeah.
I think here at iCross, into that point, when we're creating digital solutions, we surround the audiences with that work. And how detailed can sonic branding go? You know, we're creating buttons that have a click, and could you argue that that click should be reflective of the brand?
Yeah, exactly. Everything should come from one considered strategic point for sound, just as it does with marketing. Like, you're not just gonna, oh, we'll just randomly make that this color or that shape, or we'll just call it this random name that isn't aligned with anything. And the main process that we go through with a lot of brands is creating that brand track, which then allows us to pull everything from it. So if somebody then says, oh, we're starting a podcast, like for a legal company that we recently did their sonic branding, we did their sonic logo, full sonic strategy, and then they started a podcast. So we're like, cool, we'll pull out some beds from the brand track. We'll pull out some of the sounds for like transition noises between sections. So it's not super clear and obvious, but everyone knows that everything and anything you, everything that you use and anything you would want to use, you can draw from that main reservoir of the brand track.
Yeah,
so
fantastic.
You're like, cool, that all makes complete sense to us.
Yeah,
great. And what we do here at iCrossing is we often write an experience vision, which is a statement of intent of how we want people to experience the brand.
Nice.
And I'm learning so much this morning about how we should be producing sound, not just interaction elements, into that vision. So it's really great.
One thing we often have conversations about is that sound's normally at the end of the conversation, especially with TV campaigns. You know, the last thing is, right, we've got 2 days, we need to find the sound now to fit all this together. But if it was at the beginning, I feel like the end result just would end in much stronger places, or totally different places. Pot Noodle just did a great campaign, and it's all about that 12-second slurp that they do halfway through. That had to happen at the beginning, not the end.
I'm loving this. It's such an interesting mindset. And I do remember, again, going back to art school, creating videos. You'd go out and shoot a video and then put the soundtrack on afterwards. Exactly the same, isn't it? And I think actually by bringing sound into our experience visions, it will help ensure that when we start on that piece of interaction design, we're thinking about the sound.
Well, because nothing's silent.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the thing. Like, nothing is silent and nothing exists in a vacuum, really. Yeah, yeah. So it's like anytime you're doing any video content, even if you're using... if you're using sound without considering what sound you're using, it's still having an impact.
Yeah, yeah.
You're just not being aware of it necessarily and being able to measure and control it, because it has to, because like, when was the last time you watched a silent video?
Yeah, yeah.
And also there's a lot of crossover now. You know, TikTok being so huge took social media from being a silent platform because everyone's muting it and saying, you need subtitles. Yeah. Now everyone's just on the bus listening to TikTok.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're kind of like crossing over that advertising. Yeah, and the amount of times I've heard other people's music or Netflix, for example.
Yeah.
You know, if my girlfriend turns Netflix on in the next room, I know she's about to turn a film on.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And that's advertising. That's really passing the word around. Yeah,
yeah. And it's free as well, because you're not paying to be in front of people. So like if somebody's just listening to something on the bus in front and you hear their logo, then that's just like free ears on, I suppose. And if it's used consistently, then it's like, oh, that's that brand.
Yeah, definitely.
And you're not even in front of the person, you can still get it with sound.
yeah, because we often talk, don't we, about smell being such an important memory kind of trigger, but actually arguably sound is equally as powerful, isn't it? And the fact that we as a brands can then control it.
Well, exactly. And like, I think they've trialed Smell-O-Vision before, didn't they? Like in the 90s or something. It hasn't taken off yet. Yeah. So I think sound will be the one that stays.
Sure. Definitely. You can see Smell-O-Vision going wrong quite quickly.
Yeah, totally. But I think the nostalgia that you're touching on is such an important part of that. Yeah. You know, if I was to say to you to pull up an advert in your mind from 10 years ago, you probably remember the sound first and then remember the visuals of the sound, the advert. But that wasn't the conversation at the time, but that is the result of it in the end.
It's funny, isn't it? Because that sound is such, should we say, emotive. It's also a very pleasurable experience, isn't it? And it kind of triggers all the good memories. I think memories now, going back to my dad, and I remember growing up, and there must have been an article somewhere about how subliminal messaging was getting into adverts. Is that true? Can you create sound and make people do things that they wouldn't otherwise do?
I mean, there's a lot of research into sound as healing.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of research at the minute with things like Alzheimer's and stuff. It's 40 hertz. They have medical chairs that you lie in that are basically just full of subwoofers, and they just play 40 hertz to you because it actually changes your body makeup. There's a lot of stuff about like our Western music is tuned to 440 hertz. There's a whole conspiracy theory about that being from the government to control us because it puts you in a state of like tension.
Wow.
And 432 is sort of like an alternative to that, which is supposed to help relax everything. And certain frequencies, they're just vibrations, you know, certain notes, etc. So you can, there's decades of research on that. So it's something we've been integrating into some of our projects as well. It's like, we don't just think this will make someone feel this. There's actually scientific research that says these frequencies do make people feel this.
Wow.
And if you link that in with something that also sounds good and makes you like elicits the emotions that you want,
fascinating.
Triple whammy, isn't it? Power.
Yeah. And again, going back to what that then means for brands and how genuinely emotive they can be if they're influencing people, it's incredible. It's something I cross in with always do with our clients is we never stand still. We're always looking at how we amplify the experiences. And I assume it's the same for sound, is when you run a piece of sound, it kind of gets signed off, it gets produced. But then post the experience, like what we were talking about earlier and always monitoring it and testing it, do you then kind of develop it further, or is it something you need to make sure it sticks and stays to create that memory structure?
It's a bit of both.
Yeah.
So we're constantly checking in with clients that we've worked with to make sure that they're still integrating it as much as possible. Back to your question about testing and like how impactful is the sound, it relies on people being really consistent with the use of it. And if you create variations of it, you need people to know the original version first before you can then do a successful variation of it. If it comes to Christmas and you want a Christmas version, that only makes sense if people recognize the original motifs that were in the first version.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think what would you say you give to all of your clients? The
amplify. With our clients, we always make sure we amplify the experiences, so we're constantly looking at the data that's impacting those experiences and working out how we can amplify them, how we can make them bigger.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you were touching on it in terms of like a guideline earlier on. I can't recall exactly how you framed it, like the experience of it. I think like with our sonic guidelines as well, it's really important that it's very clear, because when teams change and new people come into the team, like people that weren't involved in the original conversations and the process of the sonic branding, if they just have a folder full of MP3s, like there's no emotional connection there at all. Yeah. When we deliver stuff, we have like a web page that stays online in perpetuity that reiterates a lot of the conversations we've had early on, not because we don't understand, but purposefully for if you bring a new team member in, then you're like, cool, this is why we use sound, how we use sound, and where we use sound. Do it.
Yeah.
Don't just make it up because, you know, something we get a lot in terms of like trending sounds, brands just using trending sounds, which for me is the same. It's like if I crossing, if there was a trend this fall for greens and yellows, like you wouldn't just change your logo colors. No.
Exactly.
Just to fit in, just for one thing, where that's what brands are doing with sound.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's staying on top and making sure people are super aware of the power of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they'll actually follow the guidelines.
And there's so many trending sounds out there in the world. You can still find trending sounds within your...
Yeah, if you know what you're supposed to sound like the soundboard, like drums, this tempo, maybe female vocals, you can find them that you're like, oh, cool, that's aligned with our sonic strategy.
Definitely. I remember now, this is the experience vision I was talking about earlier, isn't it? And tying it into that and making sure that experience vision isn't just reflective of the interaction, but also reflective of the sound. And what you're saying then was absolutely great. Great conversation around sound and how important it is. And we've been talked a lot about memory. Going back then, what can you remember as your first advert that really used sound well for a brand?
The first one that comes to my mind, do you remember the Evergreen advert for like lawns?
Yeah.
I'm glad I wasn't singing it, but I don't know why that comes to my mind. The other one was the Quavers advert.
Oh, yes.
And it's like the cartoon. Quaver flies out the window, floats down, catches it in his mouth at the end, and it's the whole advert's that. And then he goes like, ooh, it's floaty light. And all of their adverts use that little quote at the end. Yeah, and I was thinking, to me, that's still sonic branding. It's still, yes, it's a quote, but it's the way that he says it as a character.
Yeah, so. It's almost like it's like a catchphrase, but sonic branding as well.
I started thinking crunchy then as well. Thank crunchy, it's Friday. And the crunch, the sound of breaking through the honeycomb.
My earliest... It's not necessarily an ad. Well, it's not an ad. Kind of. It's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's the first song I think I vividly remember constantly coming back to and being excited to hear and associating emotions with a sound.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say it was that one.
There's another really good one on the back of that. A conversation we were having not long ago was about how well TV shows did this. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is still advertising itself through that theme track that's out there. And you could see that as sonic branding. It's you could pull loads of elements out of it and create a whole brand around it.
Yeah.
But they stick for years and years. But I don't feel like it's being explored as much now as it was then.
That's interesting.
The 90s in particular.
Do you think if we watch back an episode of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, because that was in the peak time of like transition noises and scenes. Do you reckon any of the songs in there?
I bet they do, yeah.
That'd be really cool to find out.
That's funny, isn't it? How your memory can also play tricks, isn't it?
On the sound. Be interesting.
20 years on and a career shift for us to watch that back and realise they were doing it then.
Wow. I don't know why I've got Mission Impossible theme tune now in my head. And I guess
James Bond as well is probably one of the early ones, even from the 60s, isn't it?
And James Bond is a brand, you know. It is it's films, but there's so much branding around it. They've got products, they've got everything that you could think about around it.
Yeah. So that's the thing, isn't it? You would never necessarily, if you were a brand, think about films as having sonic branding, but they all do.
Yeah, of course.
It's like Lord of the Rings, even TV shows like E.T. Game of Thrones, all of that is sonic branding. They wouldn't just make up different songs to use every time they had an episode. It's all there, and they all have the motifs that run through the movie as well, like Lord of the Rings and stuff particularly.
Yeah.
And what the music did for, say, Jurassic Park. And incredible. So coming back to the present day, who's the brand that's using sound really well at the moment?
Sky Bingo, just because we've just finished there, of course.
The leaders.
I do think brands like Apple do it really well because they put it across their products so nicely as well. So from TV campaigns through to online social media, through to their live conferences as well. There's just little elements that they keep dripping in with sound that I think works really, really nicely. That premium sound, you know, turning on your Mac in the morning, that sound that happens, you know, it does give that premium.
Definitely.
Feel they've achieved that really well, I think, just as a modern company.
Yeah, no, Apple are great at it.
I do think really important, and it's going back to what we're saying, when we surround our clients with digital solutions, is the real subtle interaction sounds, and Apple kind of nailed it on their head, didn't they, that startup sound.
Well, now they've got smart speakers that are doing it in home. Yeah. You know, if you order something with your voice, how do we know you've ordered the right thing?
Yeah.
And I think brands are going to start using sounds to like that confirmation tone, that you're like, oh, okay, cool, I have just ordered something from Waitrose or whatever, you know.
The confirmations one is interesting in terms of that side of the industry, like MasterCard. I don't know if you've noticed there's type thing they do every time you use MasterCard on any of the touchless things now. Like, imagine how many people they're basically getting at for free with that extra layer of sort of confidence. Like, people are kind of paying them to hear their own sonic branding, because the merchants are paying MasterCard. Like, that's genius. People are paying you for your sonic branding.
Of the exposure.
Well, exactly. Every time.
Restaurants, shops.
It's endless.
Yeah. And obviously in a very positive space as well. You're buying something new or you're getting some drinks and stuff. And, you know, we talk so much around the customer experience and the importance of it. And what I've learned today is how important sound is to that, and you know, just making sure every interaction, when there is a sound, how much you can both bring confirmation to your point that somebody's doing something, but doing it in a way that you can really associate to that brand is just so powerful.
And I think quite physically with experiential as well. You're creating memories and creating like nostalgia there straight away. So with the Lish Spirits Company we were talking about earlier, we've created a sound that happens in bars that when somebody buys a tray of shots, or if somebody has an event on and there's this moment of this sound, when you're celebrating that moment, you can then bring that home. So the brand track is now on Spotify. So if you Shazam it, or if you QR code on their bottles, they can be at home having that same moment that they had in the nightclub or wherever, you know. It's
And even endless. It's crazy with brands like that and industries like that, where they are predominantly based around social experiences and quite often celebrations. Like Lish are only the second spirit company in the world to have sonic branding.
In the world. That's incredible, isn't it?
It's mental, isn't it?
Yeah,
like
when
you think about it in terms of the size of that industry and its purpose and intention behind its customers' emotions, to then just be using different bits of sound, like it blows my mind.
Absolutely incredible. And I think, you know, with the world today, AI is making such a meaningful impact. Are you guys experiencing that? Are you seeing that AI is starting to do your job for you? Or what are your thoughts on it?
AI with music is quite a good position to be in, because AI can only be as good as the instructions you give it. And from working in the music industry and with A&Rs, et cetera, a lot of people don't know what they want. So you got to know what you want before you can get AI to make it. And I think that is where the skill still lies, is uncovering the actual needs of the brand.
And there are tools that are out there that can mimic voices of people. And so I think there's a very unknown world. I think where it could get interesting is, if you've got a really big brand with quite a wide audience, how do you narrow down to specific parts of that audience? And I think when we're watching social media, for example, and getting a targeted ad, that same visual could go to somebody else from a different demographic. But I think how it target, what sound is used, when it's used, how it's used, I think that would be a really interesting space.
Variations, particularly with
for
that.
Variations, exactly.
If you loaded it in and then it was deciphering and making a judgment on the territory that it was being used in, the demographic that it was being shown to,
time of day, are they in bed whilst they're scrolling,
have different tempos with the same motifs, playing the same song with different instrumentation.
I'm going back to the point you just made then around confirmation of a transaction. Maybe depending on the size of the transaction, it could be a slightly different sound.
So I think that would be interesting. I also think it'd be interesting to the thing we obviously don't want to happen is AI to take over the creation, because it kind of taps into the library music side. For brands using library music, you know, there could be 100 other companies using the same sound. It also kind of removes the emotional side, because it doesn't really tap into everything that they're about. So the emotion, I think, would drop if it was AI. I think, it could do a job. But in terms of how deeply it connects, I don't think it would be quite on that same level.
It's like, would you trust it to create the connection, the a connection that you need to be... like the depth to really draw in your like ideal customer. I guess it comes down to, if you were a brand and you were doing your visuals and you were doing a rebrand, would you just throw it into AI? Like, where do you see that in terms of, if you guys are branding someone, like, do you think it's gonna get to that point?
No, we hope not. And I think the problem with AI is, even though it's incredibly clever and very intelligent about how it brings stuff together, it is bringing stuff together. It's not creating anything uniquely new. And my worry is often the avoidance of beige. You know, we don't want to be completely regurgitating the past. And, you know, the piece you made straight away, was you still need that human creativity piece to it to create something that is truly relevant.
That's where the emotion comes from, doesn't it? And yes, we used to get worried about library music taking over advertising. It's gone full circle. People are back now to bespoke music, because it just does the job way better. It just feels better. It feels more luxury as well, in a sense. You know, when you're spending X amount on the visuals, you also want to be really considering the sound, and people that don't get the negative effects of that, I think, sadly.
Well, exactly, because that's the thing. that we still find really surprising is when we speak to branding agencies and they're like, oh, no, we're not being asked for sound. Like, no, you should be taking it to your clients. Like, yeah. This is something that will put you ahead of all the other agencies that you're speaking to, because this will differentiate you and show an awareness, a more holistic, you know, overview of everything to actually bring it in because of how important it is.
And it puts the agency ahead as well, because
that's the main thing,
keeping everyone ahead of the game.
It's so interesting. It goes back to, you know, 10 years ago, iCrossing, you know, people weren't really that bothered around the customer experience. Now 10 years later, it's the most important thing, and I can see the same happening now with sound. You know, we don't need to do that.
And you guys are ahead of the curve with that. You know, in another 10 years from now, agencies would be going, oh, we need to start doing experiential because everyone else is doing it. They're already too late. So I think that's kind of where it's at with sound as well at the minute.
Yeah, because it's like the future of sonic branding, like, it's already there. The future is more that people will be aware of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like something else is going to be created and then everyone's going to go, oh, wow. It's like, it's already there. Everyone's had it their entire life, but it's just like the connection.
Yeah.
Almost like a Rubik's Cube, I guess, and you get one side and you're like, oh, yeah, obviously.
From everything that we talked about today, I think it will be the expectation from customers as well. They 100%. Expect to have a really clear sound guidance
100%.
To how they interact with things.
And the stats already show it. 75% of Gen Z on TikTok have a stronger connection with a brand that has sound. Could be the opposite. It could be bad. It could be a strong connection to not like it. But, you know, that awareness is there now because it's such a sound on platform. So stats are saying it itself, you know, how much of a connection it's making.
So we've realized today how important it is. So I'm imagining a lot of listeners today go, okay, we need to sort this out.
Yeah.
We've talked already around soundboards, but what's the first three steps that we need to do to sort out sound branding?
First step is that brand questionnaire, soundboard. Let's just feel it out, figure out where it needs to be. Then creating the sound. We'd often do a brand track first, because that's what most...
So what's a brand track?
Brand track is 90-second piece of music that ticks all the boxes that we've explored in the soundboard. So that piece of music might not go out publicly, but it becomes the backbone, the DNA, I guess.
It's the central reservoir that you pull all of those elements out of for anything you might need, like podcast, UX sounds,
like an old type tray with all the different types in it.
But we might make different ones. Sorry, Luke. We might make different ones for different projects. So there might be a physical product that's being made. So we might make some kind of brand track to get the vibe of what that product could sound like. But then that might only result in the confirmation tones, the startup tones, etc. So that's kind of the second place, creating that pool. And then third is spreading that out, rolling
third
it out.
Third's using it.
Third's
the understanding and actually staying on teams with, on people, on clients' teams to help with any questions and also to hold them accountable to, like, you know, we had it the other day, someone put out a video and it didn't have a track underneath it. And we're like, why are you not using this track?
They used the logo at the end.
We forgot, they used the logo at the end, but like, they're not using the track.
Yeah.
But it's just such a... an easy thing. Like, we're always saying, like, we're here to make people's lives easier. That's why we lay things out so simply, clearly, and also stay to keep people accountable. Because they're busy, they're running their own brand, you know, they're like, oh, I forgot, damn, cool, thanks for reminding me. And I guarantee the next video they'll absolutely have it on.
In a year's time they'll be
getting in touch to chat, which then leads to the soundboard, then leads to like full projects, and then I guess accountability, I suppose, and actual implementation,
rolling it out.
I wonder if there's a case for like sound first language. You know, go back again 5 years, we all talked about mobile first, focusing on the experience and design it first for mobile phones and then scaling it up. And we've discussed this already, that often sound comes in at the end, you know, but really it should be sound first. And it's an interesting thought.
Yeah, because it can flip it. You know, what happens on the screen if you start with the sound and then you're creating the visuals around the sound?
Yeah.
You know, it could just be a totally different experience.
It really is. Like, we did one for, it was a university in America, and they had an animated logo that we were retrofitting, but this thing was so long. This was like it had been made for somebody that liked to animate logos. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And we're like, we can't do an 8-second sonic logo for something. Like, that's just not gonna have the punch, et cetera. And so then they ended up changing the animation to fit more in line with the sonic logo that ultimately was used.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
It's just made me realize we should be sound first on this podcast, and hopefully we've already created the sound that then kind of influenced the conversation.
Very true.
Great stuff. So here at iCrossing, we always create that experience vision, which is the intent of how we want people to experience our brands. And just from talking to Hear Me Out, it's interesting about how sound is being integrated.
What kind of stage in the process do you find your clients are asking about sound or getting involved in?
And this is
sound?
This is what I've learned this morning, is it's too late. We're doing it afterwards. We're creating the websites and then we're thinking about the role that sound can play. You know, we do a lot of work within the automotive space, and obviously the sound is so important to that industry. And wouldn't it be great if the actual online experience was reflective of the sound as well?
Yeah, 100%. That's a thing we find with a lot of agencies, where they're not necessarily being asked about sound, but it should be being taken to the customer and the client at as early a stage as possible. You know, as you were saying, as important as visual branding.
Great. And a big part of our work at iCrossing is creating space as well, is making sure that people don't get overcrowded with messaging. It's the same with sound. Is silence important?
It's a really good question.
I think strategic silence can be really important, yeah, especially for the emotion. You know, if there was a big moment in a TV campaign, for example, to have the silence there and then slowly bring the sound back in, the sound could be then the safe space for the brand. You know, people then have that tension moment, they're like, oh, what's going to happen? And then, you know, the brand is the comfort that then comes back into it. So that's an example.
I think the silence as well has a relationship with a softness and a simplicity, I suppose, is where my brain goes with that. And I think a lot of agencies think it's sound, so it needs to be big sound, it needs to be a sound, whereas really the subtlest of sounds can have as big an impact as, you know, a huge bombastic sound or something. So it's having confidence in the nuances of sound and the various like triggers emotionally can hit.
Well, I think the beauty and the confidence comes from the whole process of figuring out what needs to be there.
So
you might only have a little piano moment. You might only have a little string moment that happens. But, you know, the brief might have been, we need an orchestra. We want it to be really like high luxury. But actually, that high luxury could just come from one little moment. But you've done all your research by then. You know what's, you know, we've all played every situation out to come back to that little moment. And we're all for the testing and trying it all out. But it's then being bold and trusting that little subtle sound is what's needed.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, when you talk about subtle sounds, I can't not think but the crunch of snow under your feet and you know, and things like that. So absolutely, and to bring something like that, that's so emotive to a brand, it'd be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, particularly with like UI, UX noises.
Yeah.
Those little tiny things, you know, like the almost unnoticed, you know, on something, or like just some soft little thing that just has some sort of reassurance or support and gives you that confidence in something you're doing on a mobile device or an app or something. It's, you can't understate, well, you can't overstate how important those can be to the overall sonic strategy, you know.
But you're right, I think it's a bold thing to go for a small sound that feels like, hang on a minute, we surely should have something else, all fanfare, bells and whistles and everything, but sometimes you don't.
It's really interesting. In experience design, we often talk about intentional friction. And sometimes if a sound's really subtle, it might be, did I just hear something? I wasn't sure. And just in that process, you're getting somebody to actually think about your experience. And then when they hear that sound again, they're reassured that, that was a sound. And then it becomes ever attached to them.
Like
it's great. Luke, George, that was brilliant. Honestly, last half hour, I've learned so much around sound. Slightly worried about the rest of today and all the sounds I'm going to hear as I travel back from London.
Changed your life
to
Victoria
Station. I can see it. I'll walk in, I'll be listening for all the sounds. They're absolutely brilliant. Obviously, you're from Hear Me Out, and I've seen your website. You've got so much on there. Do you want to just talk a little bit more about what people can find on your website?
Yeah, so if you head over to our website, we've got a lot of resources there about our process, the soundboard process. Then you can head over to LinkedIn, where we've got a lot of content just about the industry in general, the power of sound, how you can use it to inject personality into your brand with sounds that stick. Anything you could want to learn about sound, you'll find it over there.
Brilliant. And of course, that links so nicely to iCrossing and the way that we work and enabling our brands to connect to audiences, surround them with digital solutions, and then to continually to amplify those experiences. So the partnership we've already got in place, I can just see continue to grow now with everybody getting so excited around sound.
We're so excited. So thank you.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers.